It's One on One. I am Charles Wolforth, here for another coffeehouse conversation with an interesting Alaskan. And I'm excited today to have Sheila Wine, who is one of Anchorage's best known artists, does a lot of public art, and is one of those people who never gave up on her dream of what she was going to do. She never got a day job, and somebody that we can all admire and aspire to, or wish we were like. So thank you so much for being with us.
It's fun. Thanks.
And we pulled you out of your studio where you've been ensconced, like working by yourself for quite a while. Are you trying to get something finished, or?
Well, I've been working on a couple of small pieces for an upcoming show, and then I'm working on a series of 36 encaustics right now. But that's just more studio work.
The encaustics are the wax paintings?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm combining those with my old studio roof, which is, when I replaced it, it had this allegation in the tar surface that I really liked a lot.
Allegation?
Allegation is what evidently roofers call it. It's it looks like a dinosaur hide or an alligator hide, but I don't think that's why they refer it that way. But it's just a really cool texture, so I've been using that a lot, reusing my old roof, so to speak.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So pieces of your roof in your work.
Yes, right.
Well, people are going to wonder, okay, what is her work all about? And maybe one of your more famous pieces is the new one in front of Diamond High School, the animals. And, and if people, it's sort of animals, it's sort of elongated animals on stilts. Or
yeah, it's called Big Game. And it refers both to, you see these three figures that are moving around on stilts. So, you know, there's sort of a game involved, so to speak. And then the Big Game is also the reference to, they're actually these masks that these androgynous human figures are wearing. Mm-hmm. But they're all kind of mosaiced out in sort of a commedia dell'arte look, but they also reference their own animalistic qualities.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from students and faculty and members of the community? Do you hear how they feel
sometimes,
about the piece?
Sometimes you hear a bunch, and sometimes, you know, something just sort of drops into place. And the very first public art piece I did at a high school automatically got teepeed, which I thought was great. It was like, you know, they took ownership right away. But I don't think these have gotten teepeed yet. But they're pretty high up there. They're 24 feet tall each. So.
Yeah, but they were featured in the newspaper, and I think people feel good about them.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
They
feel good about them?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they actually have made the rounds of various kind of news sites and stuff. So. So yeah, especially the one that is the lynx mask. I think Diamond kind of gravitates towards
right.
that one.
So when you are working on a piece like that, there's an audience that's going to be there. There's students who are going to be walking back and forth every day,
right.
Teachers, parents.
Right.
You've got to be thinking about them and their desires and their interests, but you're also making a personal expression. How do you mix those two things, or how do you develop a vision out of that?
Well, the first thing I do is I really study the site, which includes also studying the community, whoever uses that site. And I just try to get as many facts and impressions kind of collated all together that I can sort of study. And then out of that, I try to find something that is sort of inspired by all that information that would also inspire me. It's really important because these sorts of productions, they take such a long time to do. It's very important as an artist that I'm behind it, because there's nothing worse than having to work on something for several years that you don't really care about.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's really important to do that preliminary work, that conceptual work, well.
Something that'll maybe grow within you, and you'll find some more and more interesting things about it.
Yes, yeah. And doing public artwork, it's very important to me that there also be a lot of levels to it, so that you don't get it all on one pass. That it will continue to grow and evolve as the viewer grows and evolves, which is particularly important especially in school sites, because those little human beings are changing radically right. over the course of 4 years or 6 years, much more so than adults are. We get mm-hmm. kind of a little more set after a while, but they're constantly getting new impressions, so right. having something that...
So you like them to sort of, as a freshman, they see it one way, as a right. senior, they see it another way.
Right, that there'll be enough there, mm-hmm. that there's enough there, you know, kind of going off of Gertrude Stein, that yeah. there'll be something for them as a senior.
Right. Now, but when you are coming up with this concept, you know that it's going to a committee, which is going to be considering other concepts in your century are competing. Right. And I would think there'd be a little bit of a desire or a temptation to pander to the committee and to think about what would I do that would be popular, what would I do that would get selected. Do you ever have to fight against that or deal with that concern?
Not anymore. I don't. There about 10 years ago, I got to a point where I was just kind of getting sick of it. Mm. And my studio manager at the time just said, you know, you just need to think of things that you want to do. Mm. And stop thinking about all of these other impressions. And he was right about the, you know, influences. And so I started then just to really do it from my own perspective and the information that I gleaned from the site. Because the other thing I don't want to do is just do my idea in this sort of field, just to do my idea without thinking about the site, mm-hmm. then it becomes what I call plunk art. It's got no right. relation to anything, and right. it's not a strong piece. It might have been, mm-hmm. you know, in some other context, mm-hmm. but it's not strong because the context was not considered. Mm-hmm. So once I stopped really thinking about juries and really thinking about this and that and just started approaching it from this other perspective, then I was fine again. Of course, you get a lot fewer, uh-huh. you know, because you're just working.
You're not going to win all the time. Right?
No, not at all. And, you know, you don't win all the time the other way mm-hmm. either. You just get miserable.
Right.
You know? So it's like, might as well have fun, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think amazes people about artists like you who have a lifelong career successfully creating many works mm-hmm. is that you're full of something that has to come out, right? I mean, I didn't sound right.
No, I got it.
You're full. I mean,
I think it's pretty accurate.
But I mean, there's intellectual ideas and there's a spirit and there's emotion. Mm. There's something you want to express, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't seem to have run out of that.
No, it's you can't. I mean, it's a marathon, really, and you have to know how to pace yourself. You have to know when you're starting to feel really depleted and like go and do something else for a while. Or I want to do this. I had one set of grandparents that lived into their 90s. Hmm. I, you know, if I'm lucky, I'll have that same opportunity, and uh-huh. I want to be doing this all the way through. There's no such thing as retirement from something like this. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a forced retirement, but not one that would be chosen.
Yeah, yeah.
So to do that, you have to develop a process that will help you not burn out, you mm-hmm. know. But you also can't develop a process that allows you to get lazy either. You've got to stay kind of hungry. You got to find that balance.
Right. Well, just thinking of two artists that everybody would have heard of. If you think of like Salvador Dali, he did his thing, mm-hmm. and then he became a joke of just right. doing the same thing over and over again.
Kind of checked out.
Another Pablo Picasso, in a way, becomes more interesting as he gets older, mm-hmm. and he keeps doing fabulous stuff. And you can look at his life in each stage of his mm-hmm. life and how it reflects, the art reflects the mm-hmm. stages that he was going through.
Mm-hmm. His emotional context,
yeah.
you know, his fear of death, his fear of getting mm-hmm. older, mm-hmm. his fear of losing his virility.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very, very kind of on the page with that. Mm-hmm. You know? There was nothing that he would not explore.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you look at your old work and see stages of your life going by and have a sense of who you were and how you've changed?
So in some pieces. Some pieces I do, not in everything, because I'm the kind of artist that will work with any material. Mm-hmm. So it's not, it might be easier if I strictly worked in metal, say, or if I was strictly worked as a painter. Mm-hmm. It might be easier to document that through, but because, mm-hmm. I mean, I've worked in everything from from various sorts of materials to found objects to vegetation to garbage to, you know.
Yeah.
It's looking around, it's getting an idea and then looking around at what is the best material for the idea that will serve the idea. So I'm mm-hmm. always learning some new material to kind of try out.
Mm-hmm.
One becomes much more of a jack of all trades mm-hmm. in that regard.
Yeah.
You know. So it's just harder to document, like, oh yeah, I can see this is my young period uh-huh. and this uh-huh. is, you know.
Because of just the variety of material, but also don't the materials kind of determine how much of you is in the piece or how much emotion is expressed in the piece? I think that's what a lot of people would think, like a painting, it's almost like you're it's right there because in the colors and the shapes and sort mm-hmm. of reflect something about you. Whereas if you've gone out and taken found objects and made a construction out of them, mm-hmm. You did have to make those selections, but that's sort of a step back from you personally. Would you agree with that or do you think it's not true?
For me, it's not true. Because when I'm doing the studio work, which does use a lot of found object stuff, which is sort of separate from my public artwork or my set design work,
mm-hmm.
That's probably my most personal work for me. It's often very unplanned, and what I mean by unplanned is I don't draw it out and have mm-hmm. it all set in my head, because in my mind, if I can draw out a piece, then I don't need to make it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea right. of assemblage is to start exploring areas that I haven't even quite articulated in my head yet.
Mm-hmm.
I may start off in a certain direction, but it's more the journey and not the end product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that I might find myself in a totally different space afterwards.
And you know it's done when you just look at it and it gives you a sense of pleasure or a completeness, or how does that happen?
There's a wide series of emotions.
Sometimes you never know it's done?
Sometimes I don't. Sometimes, I call it sort of like walking backwards. So if you're walking along a trail and you're doing it more by feel and you finally get to a view and you kind of go, oh, this is nice, I'll stop here,
uh-huh.
you know, that kind of thing. So sometimes it is a satisfaction. Sometimes it's just sheer belligerence. It's like, damn it, I'm just going to stop. You know, I'm done.
The war is over. Huh?
Yeah. This dance is done. I mean, uh-huh. You know, and I may or may not come back to it because I may be so emotionally engaged in it that I don't have any kind of third eye on it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I need to relax and go away from it for a while, maybe mm-hmm. for a very long while, and mm-hmm. then come back and kind of go, oh, now I see what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, no, that really is done, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of a dance, I guess, involved in figuring it out. But yeah, I have a lot of feelings about around the period when I think something may or may not be done.
Yeah.
It can range, depending on how successful I'm feeling at the moment, you know, uh-huh. the piece.
I'm Charles Wolforth. I'm talking today on One-on-One with Sheila Wine, who is a visual artist here in Anchorage. And amazingly, we're already half done.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, I really wanted to talk about how you became an artist and how you became someone who is brave enough to just be an artist. And your parents weren't artists. I mean, you were not raised in a household. I was thinking about this a little bit, that... It seems like in our culture we let kids be artists, but they rarely see their parents being artists. So
mm-hmm.
so it's hard maybe for them to, they think of art as being something kids do,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And to become someone who can think of it as being an adult occupation, maybe it's not, they're not exposed to it that much. And were you, did you have that kind of opportunity as a child?
No, not seeing it as a profession. For example, right now on the street where my studio is, there are 5 kids that are all under the age of 13 that have grown up on that street.
Mm-hmm.
So they have now grown up with the idea that having an artist on the street is the most natural thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they see it as a profession. That's a fundamental shift
yeah.
than having just falling in love with art because you took art in high school or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, it's yeah. just a very different feel. And I just didn't have anything like that. The closest I had was a grandmother who did artwork. She was primarily a farm wife, but all through her life she did various art works, and it would change, the art form would change with her age. Mm. So when she was younger, she could paint and do pastel work, all very traditional, you know, mm-hmm. Landscape forms. And then there was a period where she went through, I guess during World War II, as I understand it, where she was just too nervous to do anything else, listening to the radio, because she had two sons in the war. So mm-hmm. she started designing and making quilts, because she could sit there and sew, and it would mm-hmm. she, it would occupy her, and they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then when she got older after that, and she couldn't really see so well to do that, she, I guess this was probably in the 60s, she developed this international pin pal correspondence and kept all of the stamps and started making collages out of those.
Wow.
So, and none of this stuff did she sell or do anything like that.
She's just doing it for her own.
It was part of yeah. her, you know,
need.
Yes, and because of that, I think I did grow up with the idea, maybe not of art as a profession, but certainly art as a way of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but that never really sunk in. I only figured that yeah. out, you know, afterwards.
Ex post facto,
yes,
as they say,
yes,
right. Right. But so you got to Alaska, how? I mean, you were yeah. I'm gonna go to Alaska, be a visual artist? Probably
yeah,
not
no,
the best
no.
strategy, right?
No, that wasn't how that worked out. I got out of college. I have a degree in literature, which I just sort of got for me. Mm-hmm. I was two quarters from finishing a degree, and I went into my advisor and said, okay, I think I'm done, you know, because I didn't think there was anything else I really wanted to take there. Mm-hmm. He convinced me to stay and get the piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
And so at the end of that, I felt like I only knew two things. And one was I had a really great reading list for life, because obviously there was a lot I didn't read that was required mm-hmm. reading. So, and the other thing was I didn't want to stay in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was really little, I wanted to, like five, I wanted to come to Alaska. So I was like, mm-hmm. okay.
Something that got planted and you don't even know how, or?
National Geographic.
I oh, think. Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Our family, I think, had two publications, and that was like Reader's Digest and National Geographic.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Somehow you just are footless and fancy free and you just take off for Alaska?
It was actually, I think, an act of desperation on my part. You know, it was like, I can't stay here because I don't know what I want to do, and it's pretty miserable here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go do this, you know. And it mm-hmm. turned out it was hard to be up here, you know. But
just showing up on your own, showing, and no
yeah,
connection of any kind.
A one-way plane ticket and a backpack.
Wow.
That was it. Yeah. I was that naive.
Mm-hmm. But you found a job and eventually...
Right? And then, yeah.
How did the art thing come about?
Well, I was a lab assistant in the ceramics department, a part-time job. And
the
I'd been
UAA?
Looking around. Yeah, and I'd been looking around trying to figure out, you know, what should my profession be? Because I had always assumed I'd go back to school. Mm-hmm. I just needed to find something that would kind of be satisfactory. And I mm-hmm. had a lot of energy, and nothing kind of, you know, took care of all that.
Mm.
And the art thing, that first year, I was going to give it 2 years
uh-huh.
because I was curious about it. And then it only took 1 year. I was like, oh, this is it.
That's
this,
what the energy fits
takes.
There.
Well, it wasn't yeah. that it even fit there. I was like, I didn't have enough energy.
Mm.
It was so all-consuming.
Uh-huh.
It was like, I'm going to have to bone up here
uh-huh.
and get a lot stronger.
So, I mean, some people make a choice about their career, and some don't have any choice. It sounds like after you had that experience, you kind of didn't have a choice.
I didn't. I don't think I did. It would have been hard to have done anything else. And I mean, and I couldn't do it on the side. I couldn't try to, you know, do it safely.
Mm-hmm.
The way I was raised and the kind of personality I have, if I had tried to say, well, I love this and I will also have a career in this. And, you know, some people can do that very well.
Yeah.
But I just knew instinctually that I couldn't. It was going to be an all or nothing thing.
Because the other thing would end up taking too much time and too much.
I would lean towards safety.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And wouldn't be able to to really invest what I felt like it should, and you know.
Well, did you start selling your work right away? Or?
No, it was about 10 years before I even kind of figured out the whole client, patron, audience thing. Mm-hmm. It was just such an internal thing that I just wanted to, I just made work and then I would show it.
Are you living on at that point?
What was I living on? I was doing, setting up shows. I'd gone back to school thinking I should get, like a BFA. Mm-hmm. So I had, I had school grants and loans. Mm-hmm. I learned then, and it's been fundamental, it's been my secret weapon, that having a very low overhead is key to, if you want to live as an artist, mm-hmm. at least for me. Mm-hmm.
Reduce your means until it fits your your needs until it fits your means.
Right.
Yeah. There's kind of an arts community in town. At least there's a group of friends that are supportive. Do they keep each other afloat?
We do, I think. I mean, we have events that, or circumstances that are far too large for any one of us to complete on our own.
Uh-huh.
And that's when you call in the troops. I mean, I'm working with a group of three others right now on a potential performance art piece. No one of us could make this happen. Mm-hmm. And it may be that even with the four of us, we can't make it happen. Mm-hmm. But, we've gathered together to make something that's larger than any one of us. And
right.
we'll see if we can, get the funding to pull it off. Mm-hmm. So things like that, yeah.
You must be one of the more established artists in town at this point.
I suppose so, but it's a very peripatetic life. It doesn't really feel that way, It still feels quite... some years I feel much more stable than other years, but there can still be times where it's like, okay, the electric bill is next month.
Yeah.
How am I going to do that?
So you're sort of a dry spell away from disaster at times, or do you feel that way?
Yeah, I can feel that way in terms of, it's not so much the dry spell of making work, it's the dry spell of not landing the opportunities.
Yeah.
It's more that. But those are good periods too. Don't waste it. If there's a long spell, there's no kind of work coming in, it's a time for just like amping up the work that you are doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the time to freak out. It's actually the time to produce.
The time to create something real rather than go back and try to do something you think you can sell.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that takes a leap of faith. When you're scared, you're worried you're not going to get any money. I mean, maybe not for you, but for a lot of people at once.
Well, no, you just kind of get used to being slightly worried, and realize that it's probably still okay, even if you are worried.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So, would it have been easier to have gone to New York City or San Francisco or somewhere like that instead of Anchorage, Alaska, to be a visual artist?
Not for me. It wouldn't have, just because I wouldn't have been ready at that point, because I didn't even know I was going to be an artist till I got here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and since then, I've been back to New York. I've been back there on a fellowship. I've been back there for various reasons, and it's like this is great, but I would never want to live here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my kind of thing, and I think it's easier now than ever before to find a place where you can live and live productively, and with the internet you can get a lot. You can still kind of get a lot of opportunity you might not think you would at the edge of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but why is there something about being here that informs or strengthens your work that you couldn't do somewhere else?
It gave me enough space to think, is what it did. I like the idea that I was in a community, in a culture, so to speak. It had enough familiarity to me, but right out there is like 2,000 miles of wilderness mm-hmm. before you kind of land in the next one, I mean, mm-hmm. however many miles it is. And that spatial distance just felt like enough room for me to breathe, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to focus.
So this is probably, well, when you're 90 and you're still doing your work, you'll probably still be there in Spinard, do you think?
Well, you know, if I have my way, yeah, maybe I'll have more than one place, you know, uh-huh. but definitely, yeah. Yeah, the studio compound has turned out to be a very good thing. Yeah.
So where can people see your work?
Well, it depends on what kind
of work. We mentioned Diamond.
Yeah, they can see the public work at... They can see it on A Street, on C Street. They can see it in West High School. They can see it in a lot of different schools because a mm-hmm. lot of public art is based around school mm-hmm. construction.
And work they can buy?
Studio work, it's more of in various shows mm-hmm. or coming by the studio. Mm-hmm. I don't keep like a rep up here or anything like that. And you have a
website where people can find out where your shows are.
Yeah,
we'll put that on our website.
Yeah, that means I should update my website.
Yeah, you'll have a few weeks to do that. Well, this has been great. Thanks so much for being with
us. Sure.
It's been fascinating. Well, really, really good. And good. So I've been talking with Sheila Wine, the artist. My name is Charles Wolforth. We're just having these coffee house conversations every week, and I hope you'll join us again next week when we'll have another guest.
One-on-One is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated. John LaFournaise directs and edits the show. Pat Yak is the producer. Camera operators are Travis Gilmore and Josh Edge. One-on-One is recorded at Kaladi Brothers Cafe at JL Tower. You can watch One-on-One Sunday nights at 6:30 p.m. and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on KAKM Channel 7 TV, or listen Thursdays at 1 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage. Tune in next week for One-on-One when Charles Wolforth interviews computer business prodigy Tyler Arnold. This is KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.